You're listening to Rosie on the House.
Let's head on out back to Arizona and see what we can get our hands dirty with this Saturday morning. It's the 8 o'clock hour. It's Rosie on the House, third Saturday of the month. We have Mr. Jay Harper, a multi-generational gardener here in the great state of Arizona now with the Farm's Choice. And Jay, I've got a stack of lawn questions here for you.
It's transition time.
It is.
Everybody's lawn's
time.
Ugly.
And it's a strange time because it was cool for so much longer. We've got winter lawns that have held on longer.
Yeah, unfortunately, actually, that's not necessarily a good thing for the underlying dormant Bermuda grass, because the longer that winter lawn hangs on, the more stress it places, you know, on the permanent or underlying warm season lawn that's now trying to come back after being dormant for an extra month or so. It really struggles because, you know, in essence, it dies. It just runs out of stored up energy or stored up sugars, carbohydrates that allow it to start to regrow again. So it has to start over from clear down in the roots, or even from other plants that made it have to send out new runners and stolons and rhizomes, and they have to regrow and fill back in. So it's always a challenge. It's never the same every year. It just what people want to do, though, is really try and terminate that ryegrass, you know, and right now it's easier to do because it's hot. So just mow it short, if nothing else. That will generally take care of it. Dethatching is a great thing. Aerification is a great thing. You know, all the golf courses are kind of in the middle or just starting to do all of that to try and give their Bermuda grasses a boost to come back more quickly now.
And middle of June, if it was your lawn, would you even try at this point, or just wait another 2.5 months and overseed early?
Try to plant a new lawn, or?
Yeah, would you just let the Bermuda grass go and just wait and hit an early rye seeding?
Well, I guess it depends on you know, how you intend to use your lawn. You know, if it's where you have dogs and you have, you know, critters or grandkids or whatever that are going to be out in the backyard, even though it's hot, they may still be on the grass. You don't want them tracking in a bunch of a dead, you know, thatch and dust and maybe even mud, then, you know, we've got plenty of time. You know, you know, I've always been kind of a proponent, if you really wanted to save water here, let the summer lawn die and just have a really nice winter lawn from October to June. And you could probably keep your winter lawn alive even through June if that's all you were trying to do is keep it going. But at this point, your ryegrass is probably about half dead or more, or it's trying to be, and you got to decide what your intent is for that lawn. The other issue is if it's your front yard, you can run into some issues with your code enforcement folks in the city you live in. You know, if you're letting a lawn die and not doing anything with it, you can be subject to, you know, some enforcement issues and fines even potentially. If that, they'll want you to either green it up or kill it and put rock in or something. So I think it's a lifestyle choice, and I think that's all part of being responsible with our watering as to what, you know, what you intend to do with that lawn and how you're going to use it, or are you going to use it as a lawn?
Bob specifically asked in his transition, he did a little research, and what he's finding is it's suggesting verticut. Now, I know we've talked about aerating and dethatching, but verticut, what is that?
Well, it's just a method of dethatching. It's just rather than using that, it's just a different kind of machine. You know, I don't even know that you can rent a verticutting machine anymore. I mean, you might be able to, but basically a power rake is what you probably will find, and it just is a method of dethatching. So get a good power rake, go to A to Z Rents, your local rental facility, and get a good power rake and get in there and dethatch it. Make sure you mark your sprinkler heads so you don't, depending on how high or low they're set, so you don't ruin those. And be aggressive. I mean, get in there and get it right down to where basically it looks like you're churning up dirt. And that will, you'd be surprised how fast that Bermuda will come back once you remove all of that canopy and that, all that competition from it, it, you know, get some, once you've got it dethatched and you've got it all cleaned up, you know, get some fertilizer on it and, you know, start watering it pretty regularly. Don't overwater it. You don't need to overwater it, but, you know, good 2 to 4 inches of water a week that will maintain a good, healthy Bermuda grass lawn. And maybe even throw some gypsum on it. It's a good time to put gypsum or soil sulfur on it along with the fertilizer, and it'll come back quick with 100 and 105 degree days and these warm nights. The nighttime temperature is really what is going to make that grass start jumping.
And it doesn't seem like there's any standard for dethatching. You go to the Shade Conference, and some people say, no, you do it before your winter grass. Some say, no, you do it to get your Bermuda growing. Some say you do it every year. Some say, you only have to do that every couple of years.
Well, you do not want to do it going into winter. I mean, that was one way that folks did it to kind of prep for the ryegrass, and they found that's probably pretty damaging to go in and disrupt that Bermuda, because when you get in and dethatch and prune basically that those Bermuda grass runners, it's going to want to regrow, and at that time of year it should be starting to slow down and store up energy, and you just don't want to do it. When you want to dethatch is when the lawn is vigorously growing and it's going to recover. So we go in now and prune heavily or dethatch your lawn as part, and it works great as part of this transition process. So don't do it. In fact, really the thinking now is when you go to plant your winter lawn is to just scalp as minimally as you can that Bermuda grass, just enough so that you can get the seed through the canopy and down to the soil level. So doing as little damage as possible is what you really want to do in the fall. And really do it later the better. Folks kind of start seeing golf courses doing it, and they economically have to do it because they've got a lot of golfers coming in when that weather breaks in October, and they want to be playing on a nice green golf course. They don't want to be tearing their golf course up in the middle of October. But middle or latter part of October is probably when most homeowners should even just beginning to do it. They shouldn't be doing it in September or early October.
You had mentioned watering the lawn. How, I will say, first of all, the technology, and you were mentioning water savings and being responsible, what sprinklers used to put on and what they do put on now, you can still get the same amount of water onto your lawn, but you're using a lot less water instead of, you know, like a spray that a lot of water evaporates. They've got streams that come on. You can angle it so precisely that you don't get a lot of water onto dirt or concrete or side rocks. You don't need to waste water watering your lawn.
Yeah, the new low-volume heads are not influenced by wind, so you don't have to worry about the wind blowing the water out onto the sidewalk or into the street. But even with those, we want to make sure they are, you know, directed correctly so that, you know, you have, you know, the right trajectory, you're not spraying too far, and that it's going where it needs to go. So there is still a little maintenance that you need to make sure you do there. But, these new MP rotator low-volume nozzles are great, especially for somebody that has water pressure problems. They're a great solution for that, as opposed to maybe having to put another valve in. You can switch to the low-volume nozzles, and you can run more heads than you can on the old heads. So it's also kind of unintended, but that will help, you know, if you have some water pressure issues as well.
Did you get a chance to look at that sprinkler lift, that new product?
Yeah, I did. That's kind of interesting. I haven't visited with anybody that does that for a living yet about it, but it is kind of a new way to treat what's not actually as easy a job as you think it is, going in and raising up sprinkler heads if they've gotten too low over the years, the grass is built up, and now your nozzle's hit, you know, not able to rise up above the canopy or your lawn, and your spray is getting deflected and not going where it should go. And that's one thing we see, that, you know, the sprinklers that are along the sidewalk, you know, spraying into the middle of your lawn, you know, they get deflected by the lawn and they just blows that water back onto the sidewalk and it runs down the gutter. So that's a sure way to save some water, is to make sure your sprinkler heads are at a proper level where you're spraying water where it needs to be. And this thing just kind of raises or increases the body height of the sprinkler head, and it's, you know, you don't have to take the whole head out. It's kind of a neat way to go, it looks like to me. I don't know what it costs and how practical it is from that standpoint, but that's always been a bugaboo for me. You're taking that head out, the body out, and dirt gets down in there and you're plugging your heads up. It's never as easy as you think it ought to be to do that.
You know, it's funny, Bill Jenkins of Think Green Irrigation and Landscape Design had a conversation I had with him. He said, you know, when I learned this irrigation install from my dad, we prided ourselves in how deep we put the water lines and set it, and this is quality building. And he goes, you know what? We changed that after about the fourth or fifth time we had to go back and repair the sprinklers. They're plastic parts. They break down. They need to be replaced. He's like, you don't gain anything by digging them deeper. We bury those things as shallow as we possibly can, so when we have to go to repair them, we don't have to make this massive, intrusive hole to get down to our sprinkler components.
Right. Yeah, and you know, and really, it, you know, with PVC, that, you know, you don't need to go that deep. In our, especially here, we don't have, you know, freezing soils and lifting and, you know, permafrost and all those things to deal with. It doesn't really gain you anything other than just being deep enough that obviously they, you know, they don't lift up out of the ground on you.
If you'd like to join the conversation, have a landscape garden question, 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. You can text questions to 411-923 or send an email if you need to snap a picture and need a little help with plant or insect identification. You can email that to info@rosieonthehouse.com.